It's the eve of Game 2 here in Toronto, Canada. I'm Lawrence Scott, joined by Tim Roy. It's Warriors Sound, NBA Finals coverage, and it's picking back up here at the Scotiabank Arena as we get set for Game 2 on Sunday night, Warriors-Raptors. And Tim, just your takeaways from Game 1 and what's going to happen here in this Game 2?
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting. I think what we saw in Game 1 was I thought the Warriors showed a couple of signs of being off for a while. You know, they weren't attentive to details as sharply as they normally are. And they were a little sluggish with their defensive transition. They didn't take care of the ball at certain times. And so I think that all led to the fact that they were playing from behind most of the game. And they've gotten to that habit. Remember, they trailed, I think, 101 minutes in the Portland series. And so I think that's something they have to get off to a good start, get a lead, make Toronto play a little bit from behind. But I thought, all in all, I think the general feeling coming out of Game 1 was that the Warriors didn't play a great game and still had a chance to win that game. So I think they're pretty confident heading into Game 2.
Stephen Curry had a game-high 34 points in the game and really offensively couldn't have done much more and was, again, very solid. Back here in a place that he used to call home, his dad, Dell, playing three seasons for the Raptors at the end of his career. And, you know, a lot made with Drake wearing the 30 Raptors jersey, Dell's jersey. Is it homage? Is it trolling? No matter what it is, it's been a lot of fun to be here. A lot of talk around this final series. Starting in Toronto, you kind of read the papers and see what people are thinking about from Toronto's point of view because we're immersed in this. You see the Jurassic Park outside. Your experience thus far here in Toronto, is it exceeding your expectations for how much they've really fallen for NBA basketball here in a place that we all have to admit is Maple Leafs country?
Well, yeah, you know, it's really funny. A couple things. One is it's not just Toronto; it's the country of Canada. You know, every Raptors game is televised nationwide, and so that makes it more of a country thing than a city thing. But it was really interesting to walk back to the hotel after Game 1 and to see people in traffic jams honking their horns not because they were mad about traffic, but because they were excited because the Raptors had won. Crowds of people marching through the streets chanting, "Let's go Raptors." It was a joy and excitement level, you know, that maybe you forget a little bit after you do this for 4 or 5 years, just how special this moment is, how special it is to be in the NBA Finals. And I think for a team like the Warriors, the expectations have kind of made it a little bit different now. They've made it, they're expected to be here. They're expected to win. And I think what we see from the Toronto and the city and the country of Canada's aspect, it's the joy of being here, the joy of recognizing how hard it is to get here.
And huge stories are emerging here. Pascal Siakam in the first game is one thing, and you see the national media and all the folks around. Sam Mitchell just walking into the tunnel there, former Raptors coach, doing some NBA TV work and some radio stuff, I believe, here in Canada. Like, the folks are out. There's a lot of chatter around all this. We will listen in momentarily to what we heard from not just head coach Steve Kerr, but also with Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson here on this Saturday as we tape this on Saturday afternoon, June the 1st. It's already June, Tim, and this Game 2 set for a Sunday evening. But when you listen to all the chatter and all the storylines and you think of what the Raptors have brought to the party here, what's sticking out?
Well, I think right now what's sticking out to me is the fact that that Toronto has come in with a very businesslike approach, and they have Kawhi Leonard. He's 18-9 lifetime against the Warriors, and so that's something to be concerned about. He is a very good player who did not have a great game in Game 1, but he controls things defensively. He sets the tempo. He's the one handling the ball. You know, they really come at it a little bit like the Warriors. You know, the guys who are handling the ball and kind of dictating the player, Draymond Green and Kawhi Leonard. So they come at it the same way. Kawhi is just so terribly strong. I think that's that to me, you know, Toronto, that and the fact that they've copied the Warriors in the sense where they have positionless players with length so they can switch on the floor and play some things defensively. So there's a lot of similarities between the two teams, but I think what the Warriors have to do is get back to who they are, and that is a smart defensive team that can get the stops when they need to allow their offense to take the game over. And when that happens, that's when we get those 10-0, 9-0 runs that the Warriors are so famous for.
We were talking about Steph just a few moments ago, and let's start with what Stephen Curry had to say to the media today here on this Saturday at the Scotiabank Arena.
Steph, Tim Reynolds with the AP. When Nick Nurse was in here about an hour ago, he said that he thinks of you as a transformational player, in that there's kids now working on 40-footers and their handles and trying to mimic the things you do in your pregame routine, things of that nature. When you're in it, when you're still playing and still playing at this level, do you ever think of that effect that you have as how kids see literally everything you do on the court, whether it's before the game, during the game, or after? Do you ever think about that?
Yeah, I think about it, especially as of late, where you have those kind of run-ins with parents or kids or coaches who are developing, you know, the next generation of talent, and they kind of, you know, have some of the same sentiments around what kids are interested in the game of basketball and what they see on TV and what they try to mimic and stuff like that. So it's kind of a cool experience. I always talk about the work that goes into, everybody sees the finished product these days on social media, whatever, you see the glitz and glam and what happens out there on the floor, but hopefully they understand and appreciate the countless hours that go into pretty much anybody on this level that is put on an NBA jersey and the hard work that goes into it. So hopefully they're inspired and motivated that they can, you know, feel like they can do some of the stuff that I do or that anybody else does in this league. But you don't just, like Draymond said, you don't just wake up or accidentally, coincidentally be great at something. You got to put the time in.
Paul in the middle.
Hi, Steph. Paul Flanner, SB Nation. The other day, Steve mentioned that, you know, being in the situation down a game in the finals on the road is fun because there's a challenge involved and you can test yourself in this kind of environment. How do you view this situation?
It would have been way more fun being up 1-0. But this is definitely fun in terms of, like, the challenge of being on this stage and understanding this, you know, one game doesn't define a series. Is an opportunity for us tomorrow to come out and, you know, get one, be, you know, 1-1 going back home, which any road team, you know, would love that opportunity. And the things that we need to do differently as a team in order to win is the stuff that, you know, is the, you know, the special part about the challenge, you know, energy, effort, focus for 48 minutes. And, you know, being on the stage again, no matter what the experience is, we're playing in the NBA Finals and we're chasing a championship, and everything that comes with it is what, you know, wakes us up in the morning and puts a smile on our face. So, you know, we've had a lot of great experiences and had a lot of battles and a lot of challenges, and, you know, we've done well with them. So hopefully this is more of the same.
Mark here on the left.
Steph, Mark Medina, Bay Area News Group. Even though you guys obviously want Kevin on the floor, the fact that he's been with you guys on this trip, what kind of presence, if any, has he been able to have behind the scenes with you guys?
I mean, like he always does, he's chiming in when he sees something in the locker room, pointing out some X's and O's type of stuff, but more so you just – when you see him putting time in, trying to get healthy, trying to get back out on the floor as soon as possible, that's motivation for sure. So, you know, we're all in this together. We said it for the entire year. And he's exemplifying that, you know, with his presence in the locker room here. And again, when he gets back on the floor, being able to transition pretty smoothly, you know, waiting on that.
What's jumped out to you as far as how he's been holding up with, you know, just being out for this long?
I mean, I know it's tough. Anybody who goes through an injury like that, you kind of feel alienated because your schedule's a little different most of the time. You're on kind of ISO with, you know, our athletic training staff, putting extra hours in. Stuff starts to feel monotonous, especially with, you know, the big stage of the finals, you know, here and now. So I think he's handling it well, understanding his time is coming, you know, sooner than later, and he's doing whatever he can on a daily to get healthy, and that's what you expect.
Standing in the back right.
Hey, Steve Popper from Newsday. Coach talked about film that you guys saw now and learned from, but when you guys have the experience that you have, do you, by the time you're leaving the court the other night, do you feel like we saw this, we know this?
No, it helps to see it for sure. I say the majority of guys out there, you may you may feel a certain way, but it's even more glaring when you can kind of see the flow from, you know, offense to defense and transition, or you know, the missed rotations or sloppy turnovers where there was a more simple pass that you could have made and stuff like that, and you can actually, you know, freeze frame it and take that picture in so that you can adjust for game two. So that film never lies, as every coach has said. You know, you can't argue with what you see on there, and we learned a lot.
Over here in the third row.
Steph, Paulo Antunes, ESPN Brazil. When people talk about the greatest shooters of all time, they often mention you and they mention your teammate, Clay. Call you guys the Splash Brothers. I'm wondering if you guys ever like talk about that nickname, the Splash Brothers, and if that's kind of like, if you guys have like a special bond, since you guys are always mentioned as some of the best shooters in the history of the NBA.
Not as much as you might think. I think we obviously appreciate each other's talent and skill, and we motivate each other with, you know, every time we step on the floor, if he gets hot, I'm like, I want to do what Clay's doing, and kind of, you know, vice versa. So probably the only thing is when people make up those random stats, Mark Medina knows really well. This year, we some like only teammates that make 200 threes in 7 consecutive seasons. It's like, that's really specific, right? But we got a nice little cutout of, you know, a little billboard kind of vibe, or poster I can put on our wall, and I made sure I got Clay one so he knows, you know, we're in this together. That type of vibe. But other than that, when people call it out, we answer it. We're all just trying to be great, continue to get better. And probably the funniest thing is when we're getting shots up at practice, after practice, we're on the same court but on different goals. And out of the corner of our eye, we're always looking at each other to see how many we made in a row, or we get happy when each other misses and get a good kick out of that. So that's probably the only kind of weird thing we do.
After the Bash Brothers in Oakland in baseball, McGuire and Canseco, how much do you appreciate the term, the Splash Brothers? Is that pretty cool for you?
Yeah, it would be something that will probably be remembered way down the line when we're done playing. But, yeah, it's just the privilege to play with somebody that can shoot the ball as well as he can and can do it consistently over and over again and is always trying to find ways to get better. In the moment, that's what you appreciate the most. And even like Mark Jackson talking about, you know, calling us – the greatest backcourt in the history of the game when he did, and trying to speak it into existence. You know, we're trying to make him a prophet.
Mark on the right side.
Steph, Mark Schwartz, ESPN. One of the things that's so apparent about you and Clay and Draymond is your confidence. And it doesn't seem to matter what the series score is, what the game score is. Can you talk about each of you, how that confidence plays in to the greatness that you guys have been able to achieve together?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason why we're here. You know, we've self-confidence is key in terms of anybody being successful at what they try to do. So we've all brought that together, and the biggest thing is we understand what we all each bring to the table and how, you know, how different we all are, but how much we all love winning. And the fact that I can look to my right and my left and see those two guys and a lot of our teammates and know, you know, that they believe we can win whatever game, you know, that we're going to have that edge. And if I throw him the ball and he's going to shoot it, I know he believes it's going in. And that confidence is contagious no matter what the situation is. So built it over time in terms of, you know, us being together as a core and a unit, and got to rely on that this series for sure.
Look,
Okay, just two more. Scott and Jeff.
Sorry, Steph.
Scott, this better be a good one. I sat back down for it.
Forget about it. New freedom of movement officiating in the league this year. How has that translated into the playoffs? Has that eased off at all? Is it the same? In terms of, you know, freedom of movement.
It's been pretty consistent in terms of how it's called in regular season and in the playoffs. I can't really, like, it's hard to, in how the series have gone, this playoff run and all that's hard to really compare to years of past. Just, I don't really remember. I have to go back and look, but it's been pretty consistent overall for sure.
Jeff, last question.
Jeff Zilgit, USA Today. Steph, Draymond has a pretty distinct personality. From your perspective, you know, what is his philosophical approach to basketball, to life? What makes him tick?
He's just a dog. Like, he's competitive at every. He wants to be the best at everything, whether it's playing cards or dominoes or playing basketball, like whatever it is, what he's doing off court in his business, like all that type of stuff. He just wants to be great, and he wants to learn and be around great people. And it's what makes him tick, what makes him who he is. And he's always trying to find that edge, and he's kind of ruthless at the same time. Like he's whatever it takes to be great, he's going to, you know, get it done.
Is it more stressful or fun to be around him?
Oh, it's mad fun. I'm entertained every single day. Just like the passion that he brings to literally everything is something I strive to have myself.
And before Stephen hit the podium, we heard from Warriors head coach Steve Kerr here on this Saturday in Toronto.
Steve, Mark Schwartz, ESPN. You guys have so many weapons in your arsenal, but one of the intangible weapons that you have is just tremendous confidence on the part of individuals on that team. How does that confidence express itself? What does it look like to you, and how does it play out when you're down in a series like this?
I think any team that has been through the experiences that we have and that has won championships has to earn that confidence. You know, I think players are naturally pretty confident at this level. Star players like we have, they've all got confidence. But what the real confidence is when you've been through everything, you've seen everything, you've won, you've lost, you've experienced every high, every low, and you know what this is about, and you can dig into your reserve of experience to remember what's necessary, which is really, you just keep going back to the basics. You know, it sounds boring, but transition defense and boxing out, and it's just, you know, football coaches just say blocking and tackling. It's the same concept, but your ability to do that under pressure, you know, when you're in the finals or in a big series, whatever, and everybody's, you know, asking you a million questions, it's can you focus on blocking and tackling? That's what, you know, that's what it comes down to. And to me, confidence is not just confidence in your shot. It's confidence in your ability to execute all the details that go into winning a game.
Mahoney?
Steve, Brian Mahoney from the Associated Press. I'm not sure if you had seen yesterday the Clippers were fine because Doc Rivers made some comments on a TV show about Kawhi. I mean, as someone, I think you're probably interviewed more than anyone just based on how long your seasons are. Do you find yourself worrying about things you say now more than you used to? And I guess on the other side of that, you guys have your own free agents. Do you worry about what other people were saying about your players?
I got fined when I was the GM of Phoenix for making a joke on the Dan Patrick show. I think he asked me if we were interested in LeBron when LeBron was a free agent back in whenever it was that he went to Miami. And I said, if he's willing to take minimum, we would take him. And Dan laughed, and I wrote a $10,000 check the next day. So I learned my lesson. So I don't comment about any other players.
Michael, right here.
Steve, Michael Grange from Sportsnet. the skill of relocating as shooters, I mean, there's no one in the world who gets paid more attention to than Steph, and probably Clay's second. And yet somehow they're able to squeeze themselves open. What goes into that?
I think it's a team-wide effort. You got guys who are willing to screen for them, who recognize those situations where it doesn't have to be a play call. You don't have to say, all right, we're running whatever, you know, four out. You recognize situations where you can just set a screen for a guy. We got a lot of smart basketball players, guys who can make passes, who can set screens. And then I've said this many times about Steph. He's very unique in that he can beat you on the ball or off the ball. And most players are kind of one or the other. But he is a guy who is equally as dangerous in a ball screen with the ball or coming off a pin down like Reggie Miller or somebody like that. So that's what makes him so dangerous.
And I guess he must be just good just reading the play, like where to find that next little seam as it's breaking down.
Yeah, it's just seeing the floor. Again, you know, going back to the number of playmakers that we've been blessed with over the years, it's what a lot of opposing coaches have told me over the last few years, is that what has made us difficult to guard is not just that we've got, you know, Steph and Clay shooting or KD. It's guys like Andre and Draymond and Sean Livingston and Bogut and you know, David Lee a few years ago and DeMarcus. Now we've always been blessed with a lot of passers and playmakers.
Tim on the right side.
Steve, Tim Reynolds with the AP. For those of us who have never done it and never will do it, what is the challenge as a coach to get on this stage and have to try to figure out how to get a player like Boogie back into the mix while, you know, not completely disrupting your rotation and with the knowledge, of course, that he's not fully 100%?
Yeah, I mean, you watch a lot of film and you discuss it as a staff, you discuss it with the players, and you try to find the right balance. So the other night, you know, I thought that he played well. I thought we had some really good moments. I thought, you know, one of the reasons Jonas Jerebko made a couple threes and Quinn Cook got open for three was because of DeMarcus's attention that he drew from the defense. So he made a couple steals. He did some good things, and that was a good first step. And so we have to figure out now as a staff, as a team, where does that leave us? Do we increase the minutes? Do we change the role at all? Those are all things we've been discussing.
And as a quick follow, I think you were asked this, and I apologize, but he came out of Thursday okay. There's no pain, no problem.
What's that?
No, DeMarcus, no problem.
Yeah,
no,
fine. Okay. It's fine.
Mark, back right.
Mark Berman, New York Post. After the game, Steve, you said, I don't know if we were familiar enough with this Raptors team at full strength. After a couple of days, I mean, how confident or how do you feel now about, you know, the X's and O's and the players' knowledge of what this team's about?
Well, it's great to have the videotape. You know, that's where you can really learn. And so we had a good film session yesterday. We'll have another one today. And I think a team like this that pushes the ball relentlessly, it's not enough to just say, hey guys, you know, transition defense is important. I think you have to feel it, and we felt it the other night. You know, they ran the ball right past us several times, and as I said the other night, our transition defense was very poor, and that has to improve.
Steve, Jackie McMullen, how are you? ESPN. How did the addition of Marc Gasol change the way the Raptors can play?
I think it gives them another passer, another playmaker. I made the comment yesterday that I feel like our teams are pretty similar.
Right.
You know, Siakam reminds me a lot of Draymond, the way he pushes the ball, the way he playmakes. And you know, we've had a lot of passing centers, Bogut and DeMarcus among them. Mark is unique because he can make the three-point shot. But he's a really good secondary playmaker. So when the ball is swung to him, really good passer, he can move the ball along and generate offense out of any traps or any type of defensive pressure. So he's a very good player.
He seems to me still, even after all these years, a little bit of a reluctant three-point shooter. Like even in that game, maybe he was some of those dare shots you were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's been a three-point shooter for that long.
Really, hasn't, no?
Yeah, maybe a couple of years. I remember maybe two seasons ago, it seemed like in Memphis, he started shooting corner threes, and they were running specific play sets for him where he'd stand in the corner and the opposing team's big would automatically go help in the paint and he'd shoot a wide-open corner three. But like so many players these days, he's worked at it. So now he's shooting the above the break three. And he's a guy who can take his time, and he does take his time, but he can do it because he's a five man. So he's standing out there above the break, and most defensive fives are going to be in the paint. It's what they've been taught their whole lives. So. But that was not the strategy the other night, to let him stand there for 6 seconds. So we'd like to be a little sharper with that.
Thank you.
Phil, back right, and Eric over here, last two questions.
Hey, Steve. Phil Barber, Santa Rosa, Press Democrat. What did you think of Jordan Bell's game in game one, and how much do you expect his minutes to be tied to specific matchups on the floor moving forward?
I thought Jordan did a good job. You know, one of the reasons we started him was because of his speed, knowing we were coming in with a 10-day break, playing on the road against a fast team. I liked his athleticism, so he did some really nice things. And every game's going to be different. Pretty much every game this postseason has been different at the center position based on, you know, what we've needed. The one constant is Looney, who's going to play his 28, 30 minutes one way or the other. So what we're always trying to do is mix and match and find matchups and fill in those gaps with the right combinations that can help us win. So Jordan did a nice job the other night, but, so did DeMarcus. I think, Bogut's available. Bogut could make an impact. And Looney, as I said, is kind of our mainstay, despite the fact that he doesn't start. So we got a lot of options at that spot.
Eric, over here.
Hey, Steve. Eric Corrine, The Athletic. Nick was in here earlier saying there was one approach you guys were using on Kawhi that he hadn't seen before or seen much. You've game planned against LeBron for a bunch and now Kawhi. Do you go into it thinking you can surprise them, show something new, or is it just a matter of giving them so like a volume of looks that they really have to slow down their process, their thought process?
Well, I think there's with great players like Kawhi or LeBron or Kevin Durant or whoever, it's the old cliche, you can't just do the same thing over and over again. But in this case, the cliche is true. You can't give a guy the same look every time. So you just try to mix it up and keep them off balance as best you can. I thought we did a decent job overall on Kawhi. He didn't have his best game. But our, transition and other areas of our defensive game were really lacking that we've got to clean up. And we're under no illusion that we're going to stop Kawhi. We're just trying to make it as difficult as possible.
And finally, let's listen into what Klay Thompson had to say here on this Saturday in Canada.
Klay, Mark Schwartz, ESPN. Just asked Steph this, that you guys have shown an ability, no matter what the score is in a game, no matter where the series is at, you guys have this incredible sense of confidence as a group. How contagious is it, and what's it like to play with that kind of confidence, and how much does it help you win these games?
Confidence is obviously big in anything you do, any profession you're in, and it starts with our leader in Steph Curry, who's probably, you just see it in his game, his ability to pull up from 35 feet anywhere on the floor. Draymond as well, who plays with great passion and confidence, and when the best guys on your team do that, it trickles down, and you need that, especially in this industry. You can't go out there and doubt yourself, especially on this stage, especially when you have a proven track record of winning and and great team chemistry and all that. So we're never going to doubt ourselves, no matter what position we're in.
Over here on the left.
Anthony Slater with The Athletic. How different defensively of a series is this for you without, you know, kind of like a high usage guard for you guys to contain like you had with Harden and Lillard the last couple of series?
It's much different. They're not as they don't play as much one-on-one as the past couple rounds. Kawhi's great at it, but they really move the ball well, and they always seem to try to find the extra man. So our defensive rotations have to be a little tighter, a little faster tomorrow because we gave them, you know, too many naked looks yesterday.
Do you find yourself in help side a bit more than, you know, just locked in,
yeah,
you know, to a match?
Yeah, so I'll have to adjust and be a helper and be better rotating because I left too many guys open yesterday and can't give NBA players wide open shots. You know, they'll knock those down.
Brian, back right.
Brian Mahoney, Associated Press. Steve's been talking about your transition defense in game one since that night. Why weren't you guys good at that? You know, was it their speed or was it just your, you know, just not up to your normal standards?
It's probably a combination of both. I mean, give them credit. You know, Siakam was running the floor like a gazelle. They were getting the ball off the rim and just pushing it. And instead of crashing as hard as we did, we'll have to make the adjustment game two and kind of try and send more guys back. But, I mean, 10 days off as well. We might have had the little cobwebs. So it was just a mixture of things. But I know this. I know we'll be better tomorrow. So that's always a good thing.
Third row on the right.
Hey, Clay. Jason Dumas, Crown 4 Sports. You've mentioned a bunch of times this postseason how there's nothing you guys haven't seen before. But you guys have never been down 1-0 in the finals, and you never started on the road either. Is that confidence that you were speaking about earlier something that can help you guys get out this predicament and why you guys are still, you know, able to believe that you can win this series and a championship, obviously?
Yes, 100%. First to four, not first to one, so still a lot of basketball to be played.
Any other questions for Clay? Over here on the left side.
Clay, Paul Antunes, ESPN Brazil. I just asked Steph Curry about the bond that you guys share, being the Splash Brothers and everything. He just said that in some practice sessions, you guys will have some friendly competitions where you'll be on one side, he'll be on the other, and he'll kind of peek over and kind of root against you a little bit there. Can you speak to that, like what kind of bond you guys have and the friendly competition that you guys share on the practice court?
I mean, he's been a great teammate for 8 years, even a better friend. And you root for guys like Steph because he doesn't take any shortcuts. He works extremely hard. He's a family man. And he's just a prime example of what you want your leader to be. A huge ambassador to the community, and hopefully we can go down as one of the greater backcourts to ever play. And obviously it's been a very beneficial partnership for both of us, and couldn't imagine playing with any other point guard because we got such a great chemistry. We know each other's favorite spots, where we want the ball, and I'm just thankful to share the backcourt with him because he's such a selfless, amazing competitor and teammate.
But the Splash Brothers nickname, is that something is that a cool thing?
Yeah, it's pretty
guys,
cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Back left.
Clay. Ryan Gorsey, San Francisco Examiner. Yesterday, Steve said that really the Raptors remind him a lot of the 2014-2015 team that started this whole thing with you guys. What's the difference between them and the other teams that have tried to imitate you over the past few years as the league has evolved?
Oh, man. I'm not sure, but they're very good. I mean, they're very long. They don't really play with a traditional post player, which is kind of similar. They really spread you out. And the biggest difference between other teams, I mean, probably their size. They're really big. They got their big men can handle the ball and make plays too. So that's very similar. Everyone on their every position player on the floor can make a play. And when you got playmakers everywhere, it's hard to guard.
Do do last three. Michael here, and then Monty in the back.
Clay, Michael Grange from Sportsnet. How much effort or energy does it take to get yourself open when a whole defense is trying to find you?
It takes a lot of patience as well. And just got to know when to use your energy. You don't want to be sprinting around the whole time, but you got just years of knowing how to rub your man off a screen or familiarity with the offense we're in. So it's kind of like it's really an exact science, but to keep it simple, just go where the defense isn't and make a decision from there, whether it's rise up and shoot, hit your teammate. But yeah, it takes a lot of energy and it takes a lot of patience because teams can do whatever they can to run me and Steph on the 3-point line. So you just got to adjust and make the right play.
Trista Crick, USA Today. You talked a little bit, Clay, about how everyone on the floor can make a play. Just was curious about your thoughts on specifically Mark and how they're running the offense through him and what defensive challenges he's posing for you guys.
Well, can't give him those open threes. He's turned himself into a very good three-point shooter. And that was a big difference in the game the other day. His 20 points were huge for them. I mean, he's a great passer, always has been. He's been in the league, very good defender at the rim. And obviously that pickup turned out to be huge for them. And we've seen Mark before in the playoffs, so for us it's just about trying to make him work on defense as well, bring him away from the basket and, you know, guard us out there on the perimeter because, you know, big guys usually don't want to do that. And, you know, if they're going to go through him on offense, we got to go through him on defense. That's just how it's got to go.
It seems like also when he's up at the three-point line, he's able to get a jump on defense. Is there a way to sort of counteract that so that you can maybe adjust?
Yes, but I can't say it because I don't want to tell him how we're going to attack him on defense. That's not smart. Yeah.
Monty, last question.
Monty Poole, NBC Sports Bay Area. Clay, last couple of days, I've heard a lot about you guys talking about a couple of things. One, transition defense. Two, rotations. And three, film watching, more maybe than usual. Having watched video the last couple of days, what have you seen, not that you're giving away secrets or anything, but what have you seen that you guys didn't do, that you need to do, did do, that you don't need to do? What did you dislike?
What I disliked? I don't think we were flying around on defense like we usually were. And I don't know if that was a combination of 10 days off or complacency or just not expecting them to make those open shots. We weren't enforcing our will like we usually do. And we got to take that challenge tomorrow, that it starts on the defensive end. Offense will come, but we got to limit them in transition and just make them work for everything instead of just giving them wide open looks. And if we take those away, make them beat us over the top one-on-one situations, we'll give ourselves a chance to win the ball game. And it'll be a much closer game and probably an uglier game, but like I said, better opportunity for us to win.
All right, and as we wrap this thing up, Tim, final thoughts heading into game two?
Well, I think we'll see a different Warrior team in game two. I think we'll see a team that is a little bit more locked in on what they need to do. I think that you know, the Warriors have always been a team that has a little trouble getting into the flow of a series early. They tend to react well and adjust well, and I expect that to happen. I expect the coaching staff to have a couple of wrinkles for Toronto that they haven't seen as of yet. And so I think we're going to see a different game too. I think we're going to see Draymond Green play even better. He had a triple-double, but in his mind, he didn't play that well. So that means he's going to be coming out, you know, ready for anything. So I think we're going to see maybe even a little bit different rotation too. I expect the Boogie Cousins to play more in game two, and I expect him to be effective. I think he's going to give Marc Gasol everything he can handle out there. And so I'm intrigued about that matchup. And of course, as always, when you're here in Canada, you have to remember that a loony is not just a power forward out of UCLA.
Yes, it's a buck and not a Milwaukee buck, but a dollar here in Canada. With Tim Roy, I'm Lawrence Scott. Tip off for game two, 8 p.m. here in Canada, 5 p.m. back in the Bay Area. We're looking forward to it. Much more coverage ahead during the NBA Finals. This is Warrior Sound.